Did you know that your gut is directly connected to your brain and can contribute to anxiety, stress, and depression, which, by the way, can also impact your sexual health? So here's my secret weapon for gut health, Just Thrive Probiotic. Now listen up. Just Thrive isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is the only one that survives your stomach acid and reaches your gut 100% alive. All those others, the ones that come in fancy drinks or you gotta refrigerate, nope, that's not even a thing. This is the one. I've noticed significant changes to my overall health. Like, this might be TMI, but I'm way more regular and my skin is glowing. Think of Just Thrive like your personal gut gardener. It maintains the health of your gut by weeding out the bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and then replenishes the good, making it a total game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, even your mood and sexual health. And if you want to check out my episode with Just Thrive's founder, Tina Anderson, we talk all about how gut bacteria plays a crucial role in your overall happiness, including your sex life. Because a healthy, balanced gut means less stress and more energy. So if you want to check it out, I'm offering a deal for my listeners. You can save 20% off site-wide at justthrivehealth.com with the promo code SEXWITHEMILY. That's 20% off on the probiotic that's truly changing lives and making waves in the wellness community. Everyone's talking about it. Don't just take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Go to justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code SEXWITHEMILY for 20% off. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. On today's show, I'm joined by sex and relationship therapist Cindy Darnell, and we're talking about all the ways to tap back into desire and arousal for a better sex life. Topics include, if you're waiting until you're horny to get it on, and you're never horny, you'll be waiting a long time. Sex is about power, and it's not the struggle you think it is. Every person needs their own plan for the bedroom. What's yours going to be? And ways to keep sex top of mind so you can keep your engines revved. All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily. You got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's gotta have her standards. Oh my.
Do women know about shrinkage?
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh my God, I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, check out sexwithemily.com. You can subscribe to our podcast. We're releasing 3 shows a week. You can also find me Monday through Friday on SiriusXM Stars at 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock East. It's awesome. If you want a free trial for SiriusXM, you can go to sexwithemily.com/SXM for a free 30-day trial. As always, you can follow us on all social media, which we love, at Sex with Emily across the board. I hope you enjoy the show with sex and relationship therapy. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I am pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. For Cindy Darnell. I'm really excited because Cindy Darnell is here, and she's a sex and relationship therapist. She's now based in New York, but I believe you see people everywhere.
I do. I have an international practice.
I love it.
All over the world and all over the US and Canada.
I love it because you were in Australia when we first met.
Yeah.
And now we get you in the United States, which is awesome. She's internationally renowned sex and relationship therapist, and she also she's released the Atlas of Erotic Anatomy and Arousal, which is an educational guide, which we all need more. We're going to talk about that. She's amazing. You can find her Instagram and Twitter at Cindy Darnell. It's CYNDI_DARNELL. And her website, CindyDarnell.com. This will all be on the show notes. Cindy, welcome to the show. I know we just had you for a few minutes, a little teaser there, but I would love to go out.
Premature entry.
I love it. You have a little premature entry. I am so excited. I love talking to you about all this stuff, and I love your take on so many things. And what we were just talking about before
Thank you.
Was so cool. I mean, I love the way you're saying this, is that sex is about power. There is a certain power play, no matter what kind of sex you're having.
Because I think there's two bits to this conversation, you know, Emily, because I think, first of all, power is a dirty word for some people, because when we talk about power, we tend to think about violence, we tend to think about someone being hurt, someone being abused. That's a thing, and that is a real thing, and that exists, but that's not what I'm talking about. What I am talking about is the intention of actually creating an erotic experience for yourself and your partner by allowing one person to take control of the situation consensually, with something that creates a sense of freedom and a sense of excitement and a sense of abandon. And I'm not talking necessarily about really kinky sex either.
No.
I'm talking about just kissing. So something like, you know, when you're dating and you are walking home, or you're in the car with the person you've just been on a date with, and you go to have that first kiss. Who initiates that kiss? How does that whole thing start? How does that play out? And it can lead to this sense of really being taken somewhere, being taken on a journey, being taken to a place where you start to feel like this is possible, this is exciting, this is new. And I think we tend to forget that in long-term relationships.
Yeah.
We tend to forget that we are both responsible for creating scenarios where that kind of magic happens again. It might not happen every single time you have sex. But
don't you kind of, what we were saying earlier, is we kind of do need that, Matt. Like, there is always someone in the power, in the dominant, in the submissive role.
Yes.
In the energy. So
yes.
How do you create that? If you had it at the beginning, we all want that honeymoon phase spark back.
Yeah, I think one of the easiest ways to actually get that flowing again is, first of all, is to talk about the fact that that's what you want to do, and agree in advance who's going to take on what role. If it feels like something that doesn't necessarily come naturally, and I'm using air quotes here because I actually don't believe that much of sex is natural. I think it's all learned.
I agree.
Okay. So when I say when it comes naturally, some people may be a bit more naturally aggressive or dominant than others. Some people are naturally more receptive than others. That is a personality trait. But also, how we are in our day-to-day lives is not necessarily how we are in the bedroom. So this is another element of the sexual dynamic that can come to life. Someone who is a woman who's a working mother who has a job outside of the home and she's also working inside of the home, maybe the last thing that she wants to do is have to also take control in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Maybe what she wants to do is just be, you know, be dominated, be in that position where she is the recipient of all that energy and all that desire and all that attention, where she actually gets to check out and let go.
Yeah.
And when I say check out, I don't mean blank out or pass out.
We don't mean like disassociate. We
not
mean
at all.
Like just I can totally
relate
to that.
To be able to really just to relax and receive the attention of her partner in a way that is really deliberate, that is really intentional, that is really coming from a place of, I want to create this experience for you based on stuff that I know you like.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be especially wild and kinky. It can be. But it can be just, you know, through kissing, through having their hair stroked, through having your neck kissed. When was the last time you slowed down enough to really kiss your partner's neck?
I'm telling you, not that does not happen.
I can tell on your face.
That's all I want is a goddamn neck kiss. Like a long, it's sensual. So sexy. You'll get to my clitoris.
Halloran is licking my knee right now. Oh, he's talking about neck kisses.
Neck kisses. I love that dog.
He's giving me knee kisses.
But like, how do we like, that's the thing. I guess we talk about it and we have to keep, we have to have an active conversation with our partners about what we want. But like, for example, Patrick called in just now before the break and he was like, I want to put my part. She told me that she liked it when I put her hands back. Right.
Exactly.
And then he's like, well, what do I do? Right?
Yeah.
So in a sense of like, I think that there's a lot I can relate to being wanting to, I own a business, I'm a working woman, I'm out there and I'm submissive in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. Like I'll get all the equipment. I've got all the toys, I got the lubes, I got the condoms, it's all charged up. But I just want to lay back.
Absolutely.
I'll do stuff.
Because your whole working life is about having your life organized, being on top of things, being organized, being the queen of the castle. To have to do that in bed as well, for some people, is really not very sexy. And this also applies to men.
Like, of course.
You know, there are a lot of men who enjoy being the recipient of the attention too. So especially if you're in a relationship where you both enjoy being in the submissive role, trying to work out whether or not you can actually both play the more dominant role is something that you're going to have to work out through a conversation.
Yeah.
Maybe a facilitated conversation with me or someone like me.
People come see you. I love that you do Skype calls too.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's amazing. So, CindyDarnell.com.
Being able to have a facilitated conversation, and this doesn't mean that there's something wrong in the relationship, you know. So this is often, I think people think that sex therapy is where you go when your relationship's about to fall into the trash can. No, it's somewhere where you go to have facilitated, organized conversations that help enliven and enrich a relationship. How do we bring this spark back? How do we bring this sex back? What do we do? And so for that caller about, you know, what do I do when her hands are pinned up? Having that conversation while you're pinning her hands is probably not the best time. Have that conversation over lunch.
After, right.
You know, have that so you can be prepared in advance for the next time. And then you make that part of your foreplay. You send her text messages during the day. When I get home tonight, I want you to be wearing these panties. I want you to have these shoes on. And I don't want to hear a word from you when I come through the door. And she's like, oh, so she's at home and she's getting ready to da, 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 because she's got something to look forward to. So you set up that dynamic in advance. It's not just something that happens when you get in the bedroom. This is a way of interacting with the world, you know?
Exactly. God, I hope my future ex-boyfriend is listening to that. That's exactly what I want. Like, text me ahead of time. Tell me what you're going to do. That would be amazing.
Yeah. And then we also establish consent that way,
consent.
Too.
Okay, so talk to me about the common things that... Do you see couples, too?
I see couples, mostly, individuals, right?
So what are they coming to see you about? Like, mostly, if you had to say, this is what happens mostly.
Look,
just typical.
All kinds of things. I'll see individual single women who are either single or in relationships. I'll see them on their own to talk about orgasm problems. That's a really, really common one.
Orgasm.
Yeah. Women with orgasm problems. Men with ejaculation and erection problems is really common, like really big. And then couples who either have what we call a mismatched libido, so one wants sex more often than the other, very, very common. And then sometimes it can also be things like different kinds of activities. Mm-hmm. Somebody wants to do stuff that's a bit more out there than the other one. And increasingly, people negotiating open relationships.
Yeah, that's a big one, right?
Big people, new one as
that
well.
Is a big one. Yeah. Okay, so has there been anyone lately, or can you speak to some kind of transformation that speaks out in all the years you've been doing this of a couple maybe that transformed in some way that came into you in one way? And this probably, I'm sure you've had a lot of success.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't be where you're at. But is there some kind of couple or good example that could exist, like a couple that came into you and they were like, our sex life is dead. We've been together 30. Like what that protocol would look like, what you would walk them through if they were just like, I never want sex. My husband always does.
Yeah.
Like where do you start and what's kind of, do you have any good stories that?
Yeah, well, the success of a couple in a situation like that depends upon their willingness to actually see their partner as someone who is worth investing energy into. Because if you need to be right rather than be close, your relationship's in the bin.
God, there are those people, right, who just need to be right all the time.
And so those couples, I can usually tell within a couple of sessions if it's going to work out or not. And I'm usually quite frank with them.
What do you say?
I just say to them, if you need to be right rather than close, this is not going to work.
And usually one person, right? Or they both need to be right.
Or, well, then it's the same thing.
Exactly.
You know, or if one is not listening and one is like, it's my way or the highway, we're not, you know, I can't compromise on this. And so, I mean, depending on what the thing is.
Yeah.
If it's a thing that is compromisable, then I really encourage what I would call a considered, compassionate discussion about the compromisable thing. If it's something that is pushing somebody into doing something they absolutely don't want to do and they have a really strong visceral reaction that pushing them to do it would be a consent violation, then that's not what I'm talking about. That's a very different mm-hmm. thing.
Right.
This is somebody who is saying, I'm not doing that because I'm annoyed with you because you haven't done X, Y, and Z for me.
Right.
That's a very different thing, because we're just starting to use sex as a tool to hurt the other rather than using it as a tool to bring each other together. So when there is that resentment that's underlying from other stuff that's not really about sex but it's affecting sex, that's one way that I would do it. If there are a couple who are, we really want to work on this, we really want this to change, then those couples actually get results relatively quickly. You'll start seeing changes within 2 or 3 sessions.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
So they're like, no, we both, because that's what I'm always telling couples, and you guys can call with any of your questions, 888-947-8277. I'm here with Cindy Darnell. Is that if you both want to do it, I would say, like, because people call in, they're like, well, my wife or my husband or my partner or my girlfriend, it's like, you have to, they're trying to save it on their own, but yes. You have to both have the buy-in. Yes. Like, we always like take it on ourselves that
Absolutely.
There's one person who wants it, but until you both got to be on board with it. So
Absolutely.
I love that you're saying that. So when they're both on board, you can move it pretty quickly. That's what I'm
always
saying.
You can move it really quickly.
Like, go see a sex therapist. Go see, like, do talk to someone. Mm-hmm. So once they get over all the stigma and they come to you, what would be their, because you're a sex therapist and you're also a regular therapist. Mm-hmm. Where do you start there? So what would be like, do you give them a homework assignment?
Yes. So if they were committed to making changes then and there, I would give them homework to do that night. And it might be just in the initial stages, just talking about sex. It might be listening to radio shows, listening to podcasts about sex, just to get some ideas. When they come and they sit and they'll say, you know, well, what can we do? It's that sort of lethargy, that sort of kind of low energy that is often the cause of the difficulty with sex in the first place. So it's kind of like, well, Cindy, you tell us how to fix it. And I'm like, no, you have to go and actually work out what's going to spark your fire. So I give them homework of finding activities that they're willing to try and then to discuss that with each other. Because if I tell them what to do, nothing's going to change. They have to find activities that spark curiosity in them, that spark enthusiasm in them. And that could be anything from going on a date together and then taking a tour of an adult store afterwards.
Yeah.
Because so many of the adult stores these days are fantastic. Or if you live in a town where there is not an adult store or you can't take the risk of going into a store, go and browse online together and buy yourself some lube, buy yourself a toy, buy yourself some whatever that you can commit to sharing and trying together. So it's about actually getting involved in the process and not having it be a passive activity where I'm just going to do what the doctor says, that we're going to co-create this together. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. That is such a good point because we all learn differently.
Yes.
So some of them you might say to them, watch porn, go to a sex toy store, go online or listen to podcasts or read a book. And we all learn differently. So they might, for some couple, they'd be like, we're going to go right to Good Vibrations if you're in San Francisco. Or they might say, let's watch some porn. Like, you don't, we all learn. So I love that you give them options, but they get to figure out what works.
Because
otherwise, if you just said, go home and watch porn, and they were like, oh my God, porn makes me uncomfortable.
And that's the thing. And so I will always scope out with them. So how do you feel about porn? How do you feel about going into an adult store? How do you feel about, it's like seeing each other naked. You know, a lot of people don't even want to do that, which is fine. But I have to take those things into consideration, because if I'm going to try and force someone way out of their comfort zone, it's not going to work. That's why it has to be a co-created collaborative thing that I meet the client where they are at.
Yes, you got to meet where that. That's really good advice. So what about the couples we're talking about? We talk about mismatched libidos, but about desire.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's just talk about that concept of sexual desire, passive sexual desire.
Mm.
Arousal. What is it? This is what? Desire and arousal.
Yeah, which are two different things.
Two different things.
And a lot of people, I think, tend to mix them up and they think that they're the same thing.
Right.
Yeah. So the way I make the distinction is that arousal is the...
That's why I wanted you to talk about it.
Arousal is the physical part. So that's what actually happens in the body. So that's the erections, that's the lubrication, that's the thickness and the... How graphic can I get with my language
graphic
on this show?
Very graphic. You can swear anything.
So, yeah. So that's the full kind of thick, wet pussy lips. That whole thing is... That's what we call arousal. Desire is the mental component, the emotional component. So the... It's kind of the two ends of the spectrum, the head and the genitals at opposite ends, if you wanted to look at it that way. That's how I describe it. So what happens with people when they say that they have low desire? That doesn't necessarily mean that they're not having arousal. Right. They may still have erections through the night. They may still have wet dreams. They may still get horny from masturbation. That all of that stuff can still happen, and that person can still say, well, yeah, I don't really have much of a libido or much of a desire. The word libido and desire tend to be interchangeable, right. And that's the longing to have sex. So desire is the mental component, and a lot of people, particularly folks who've been together a long time, women as well as men actually, increasingly more and more men are just like, meh.
Right, you know, exactly.
I can't be bothered. If I have a night off, I just want to watch Netflix and eat popcorn and have a couple of beers.
Yeah.
I can't be bothered having sex. So, and that's fine. Except for when that starts to become the default in a relationship and, you know, 1 week turns into 1 month, turns into 6 months, turns into 1 year, turns into 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, wow, you know, what are we doing here in this? Is this relationship still a sexual relationship? So... Working with desire is about finding ways of finding willingness to have sex without relying on horniness as the motivator.
Exactly, because that just goes away anyway. Like and it really does, yeah. After the beginning, and we're so getting your brain on board with sex,
exactly,
and your body will
exactly.
follow.
Exactly, and a lot of people when they come to me and they're like, you know, I have a low libido or no desire, the first thing I will ask them is, what do you think is a reasonable or a good enough reason to have sex? And in 100% of cases, they will say to me, I don't feel horny. And I'm like, do you need to feel horny to have sex? In the same way that we don't eat just when we're hungry.
Right.
We eat for pleasure. So in the car coming here tonight, I had 2 pieces of chocolate. Did I eat them because I was hungry?
Right.
I ate them because I wanted to experience a sensation.
Exactly.
So if we're going to wait for horniness to be our primary motivator for sex, we could be waiting for a really long time. We could be waiting for a bus that never comes.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
So this is why we have to start developing a relationship with desire that goes beyond, am I horny or not?
Right.
Because for a lot
it's
of people...
It's not just going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I always talk about like the brain turned us on, but and the thing mm-hmm. is understanding that it's not just going to hit you over the head.
Yeah.
And then it's also confusing sometimes, like when your partner comes in and they're, like I always say this, with men coming in, they might have an erection and turn on, but for women, it's very different.
Yes.
We weren't thinking about sex all day. We don't just have that kind of...
Exactly. And so that's why for men who... maybe have a sort of a naturally higher libido, and I mean like they're just more kind of horny all the time, and they're thinking, when I get home I want to have sex, and or they're going on a date, they're seeing their girlfriend that night, getting her engaged sexually can start happening at just after breakfast,
right,
with text messages, with I can't wait to see yous, with, you know, all these kinds of things that are going to help create a mental context, because it can actually take a much longer time to get the head and the body to start talking to each other than just having sex and having it be over in 15 minutes.
Right.
For a lot of people, particularly women, it's just not long enough. Not even to have an orgasm. I'm not even talking about that.
Just the
sex. I'm just to get in, to actually get in the mood.
Right.
Because it can take time. Like when you go to the gym, you don't go straight into your routine. You've got to warm up first.
Right.
And that takes a little bit of time. So part of that then people say, oh, you know, I don't have the motivation. I don't have the motivation for sex. It's like, well, you got the motivation to go to the gym. You got the motivation to go to yoga. But you don't really feel like it. You don't spring out of bed in the morning and think, yeah, I'm going to yoga. No. This is awesome. You go to yoga because you have a motivation that extends beyond your love of getting out of bed on a cold morning. No one likes getting out of bed
does.
On a cold morning,
exactly.
But they do it. So we have to apply that same principle to sex.
Okay, guys, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into your calls and even more sex talk. Cindy Darnell, sex and relationship therapist. I want to see you.
Okay, you're seeing me therapy. Right now.
I know. This is such a great conversation because I think, you know, I think a lot of us can relate to the fact that sex just isn't top of mind and therefore we feel broken because we never want sex.
Yeah.
We'd rather do everything we can to avoid it sometimes with our partners. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a huge point of contention in our relationship. Sometimes the point.
Yeah.
Because we don't know how to get it back. Because we compare it to that glorious honeymoon phase beginning thing. But that's just not real life and realistic. Exactly. So we were just talking a lot about the desire, which is a mental game.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so how you can kind of infuse your relationship with more of that so you can up the desire.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really simply a matter of, at a basic level, is making it a priority. And that might also involve making time for it. And then people are like, well, I'm busy, I've got kids, I've got work, I've got this, I've got that. And the truth is, you have time for it. It's going to involve shuffling things around, but you do have time for it. Because back at, you know, when you first started, anything that's worth doing, you make time for.
Exactly.
And sex is one of those things. And I think that we tend to get away with thinking that, you know, again, coming back to this idea that sex is natural, it's not. It is learned. The instinct might be natural, but the skill and the time, these are a craft, like learning to paint or learning to play guitar or learning to cook. No one is born with those skills. You might have an innate kind of pull towards one of those things, sure. But the actual craft of it, you have to learn, and you have to learn it from somebody else. And so because there's so much stigma about learning sex from a sex therapist or a sex educator or a sex coach, that we don't have that stigma. If you want to learn to play classical guitar, you go and get a classical guitar teacher, and people are not like, ooh, so-and-so is seeing a classical guitar teacher.
You should be, you should be musically gifted.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh, Julia's going to sleep with her banjo instructor.
You know I will.
It's true, right?
But you have this stigma about reaching out for help. And so my thing is, how on earth are you going to learn what you need to learn if you don't go out of your way to learn it?
Right.
Really.
Exactly.
Like, that information is not just going to fall out of the sky onto your head. It's just, you have to seek it out. And then the next bit is, you have to learn to integrate that information. So because, you know, the internet, it's a thing now, and and we all love it. But, you know, there's loads of information on the internet now, and you know, you can pretty much find anything you want on the internet now, which is great, except that there's all this information and nobody knows what to do with it. We don't know how to integrate it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, so this is where a coach or a therapist becomes useful, or just, you know, having an old-fashioned conversation with your partner.
Yeah, no, it's true.
That's how you integrate that wisdom. So, you know, all of the toys and all of the workshops and all of that stuff is great, but all of it means nothing if you don't integrate it into your life. So that's where it comes back to making stuff a priority.
Exactly.
So if you go and buy toys and lubes and all kinds of things and they just sit in your closet,
yeah,
that's not going to change like things.
Me. Well, no, it's my job, but I open up the show talking about my sex. I literally have a sex toy closet. That's insane. But even at home, I open up the show talking about sex goals. I'm like, I am surrounded by sex. I've got all the toys, all the things, all the lubes, the Sibian,
exactly.
Crazy. But lately, I'm just like, I feel like I live in this barren, what was I saying? A cold, barren home with no furniture. And I'm just like, I don't know where the chargers are. And I'm not
dildos.
Even, literally, all I have are dildos. Like, it's all I have.
Do you have no furniture?
Like, if there was an earthquake, I have one couch.
Do you have spoons?
I have no food.
And forks?
I
have, do you eat off a dildo?
I could. If there's a way to do it, I should. I have beautiful, colorful dildos.
Do you use a fleshlight as a
charged
cup?
That's how she holds her flowers.
Pervertibles.
It's a vase.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. Might as well put them to use. I mean, you should have seen this woman help me with order. Her eyes rolled back. Like, she's like, just empty out that nightstand real quick. I'm like, real quick, there was like 800 bottles of lube, like literally like full bottles, and then the bottom drawer was just a bunch of toys, no charger, so probably like 40, like a bunch of them. And she's like, what? Like, it's crazy. But then still, if I don't integrate it, like I was even saying, like, even I'm telling everyone to masturbate because it is so important. And we can talk about, I'm sure a lot of your homework for couples are to just like go, and I always say, just like going to the gym. I never am like so psyched, but I never regret it. I'm never like, why'd I go to yoga? Yeah. That was a terrible waste of my time. It was getting out the door, even if I didn't didn't want to do that. It was
always
hard.
The hardest
just
part.
Like yeah. sex. And mm-hmm. so I realized lately, I've been like, oh, I don't need to masturbate. I don't need, oh, it's over there in my cold, barren home. I got to bring the vibrator and charge it. But this weekend, I've committed that I'm going to do it to my listeners. It's time.
Sorry, just like
it is cold, barren.
Wow,
it is.
Emily, I want to make you my case study. I'm going to therapize you, and write about you.
Write the sex therapist surrounded by dildos, not having sex. There you go, babe. You can have it. Life rights. I have had sex. I've used them all. I'm just saying. I'm in a little of a. No, it's fun. It's interesting. I am a fucking.
Now I just imagine sometimes, like a Game of Thrones style, just. Chair full of dildos.
Yeah,
like,
really?
That's the only way you sit.
It's true. Can we make that happen in my house? It is mm-hmm. color. There's a lot of stuff going on. No, I'm it's interesting in that way.
Yeah, but, yeah. It sounds like
24/7.
But that's the thing. I mean, even for me as
Skype?
A sex therapist, yeah, absolutely. We can do whatever you want. I have to be attentive to my own sex life.
Yeah, right? So how do you, right? Okay.
So, and I have to still make these things a priority. So having just moved to New York, I'm dating and.
How's that going?
It's great.
Tell me, how are you meeting people? I'm just starting to date again.
I'm not using until I make a love den, of online sites. I don't know, who do I say then?
Doesn't matter. Oh yeah, totally.
Anyway, I'm not sponsoring anything.
No, I don't care.
Yeah, so I'm using Tinder and OkCupid.
Great.
And I've met some great people. Really great. But I've been doing a lot of online dating for many years.
Right.
And in fact, I'm actually going to create a course on how to have fun with
you
online dating. Because I sort of have the Midas touch with it.
Tell me.
And well, because part of it, I think, is that we go into online dating, particularly when we're a bit older. And by older, I mean like maybe over 35, maybe right. over 40. We go into it often with this sense of I have to find the one, or we're often looking for things that don't exist.
Right.
So part of it is that we forget to have fun with it. And I think one of the reasons that I have had such a great time online dating is because I approach it like going and meeting a new friend, that my expectations
yes.
are... I don't want to say I have low expectations.
No, but it makes sense.
Awful.
It's true. What can I learn from this person on
yes.
this date? What if I learn something? What if we have a great meal, a great drink, something?
Yeah, because I can always find something that I will connect with a person, unless they're a complete, you know, douchebag, and then I just go, oh, look at that. It's that time already. And
right.
you know, but mostly I have a great time dating.
Yeah.
And in all the years that I've been online dating, I've had everything from flings and one night stands through to substantial relationships.
Yeah.
So it's all possible.
It is. I agree
and
with you.
And when people sort of roll their eyes at me and be like, ugh, you know, I think that, you know, the vibe is wrong, the intention is wrong, and there is a way of doing it. Not doing it right necessarily. It's not that I have the perfect
no,
plan.
No, I understand.
But I think going into it expecting to meet your perfect match, you're really... You're setting yourself up for disappointment.
Yeah, you're right.
That's
and I think
problem.
It's important to know what you're actually looking for.
Exactly.
And to state that early on. I mean, mm-hmm. I've done online dating. It's been a while, but this is the year. I'm going through a break. I mean, the breakup's over. You don't go through it. But that's why I'm talking about my barren home and my sex toys in charge. It's not that it's always been this way, though. There is still a lot to analyze. And I don't know how long it's going to go on, but I am... It's true that with dating, I've done it before. I've done Bumble and Tinder and... What was the other one? Hinge. And mm-hmm. I actually really enjoy dating. I do. Mm. But I also felt like with the apps, I would get a little bit overwhelmed, like with the get texting back and the, but I get like that with my emails. So,
yeah.
But what are some of your best tips for managing it all when it does get overwhelming?
Like,
do you have special first message tips or weeding out who's right, who's wrong tips?
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty kind of ruthless in the initial stages of finding someone who's good and bad. So like on Tinder, for example, if they have no information written and it's just a couple of photos, unless they're overwhelmingly hot, I'll swipe no. And if they're overwhelmingly hot, I'll swipe yes. And then I will send the introductory message and it will be something kind of witty and kind of charming as I am.
Right, of course.
And
duh.
If they write back with just like a one or two word answer, I'll do a couple more exchanges like that. And if by the third time they haven't engaged with me, bang, they're out. No matter how hot they are, I'm like, see you later.
Yeah, of course, right? They can't communicate.
If you can't talk, then frankly, we can't fuck. This
right.
is not going to work.
Right,
for me,
no,
for my temperament.
Yeah, no, I need that banter, mental turn me on with your words.
Yeah. And so, and that's the same too. So if they initiate a conversation and it's just like, you know, hi, smiley face, it's like, what is that? Like that, if you're not going to put in effort at the beginning, what are you going to be like 3 months down the track? Like,
right.
So that's, you know, really for me is a really strong criteria of yes and no. If you're not going to put in the energy up front, then forget about it. So, and it doesn't necessarily have to be an amazing opener. Usually an opening message, if there is content, if there are words on their profile, read their profile.
Read it, yeah.
And write something about what they have written that shows that A, you're interested, B, that you read it, and C, that you're capable of having an adult conversation.
Yeah.
That's not just hi smiley face or hi winky face or, you know, great tits or something. As,
right. You're like, I know they're great.
You can
great.
Admire Tell someone's tits. It's fine. It's not that we want to shame any of that kind of erotic language. But if that is the opening phrase, it tells me that you are not capable of having an adult conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have great tits, but you'll get to see them when I'm ready.
Exactly.
You know?
Right. So no, I have another question for you. I want to go to something that you just said because I think that's so true about the opening messages. But how do you screen if you're going to be on the same page sexually? Do you have sex with them quickly? Can you tell? Do you ask questions?
I have.
Tell me. We need to know.
You mean with the swiping right or left?
Oh, yeah. Well, you're saying, early you said, stage? You said you wanted to. How soon do you determine if someone is if you're sexually compatible? Is there a way to do it in words? Or do you have to wait till you see them and there's chemistry?
Me, personally, I generally
Jamie
have to wait.
Jamie needs help, too, next week.
I have to wait till I've seen them face-to-face in the real world.
Okay, so there's nothing you do.
I can feel there's a little bit of banter online, which is when I will agree to meet them for a drink or a snack or whatever. But the real moment of reckoning is the face-to-face contact, I think.
Can you tell, like, within, like, the first meeting whether or not you think or...
Usually.
If you'd have sex with them or what they're...
Within about 5 minutes, I can usually tell.
Do you talk about sex on the first date? Do you kind of... Is there anything that you try to...
Yes and no. It depends how... It depends where I think it's going. If I think that the connection is purely sexual... And that we're not really going to have much else in common except that I'm straight in there. And my main question is, what kind of sex are you interested in? What kind of sex do you like?
Do you say that?
Absolutely.
On the first date?
Yep.
Okay. And then do they then go, what do you mean? Like, a lot?
Sometimes. And adult, because, you know, the job that I do, Emily, like... I'm not a kindergarten teacher, you know? So I have to, I need to be with someone who is at least at that level. Now, if I'm looking at talking to somebody where there may be something more than a casual connection, where it's not necessarily as sexual and it's a little bit more, there's an intellectual match, there's more of a kind of, you know, spiritual match or however you want to call it in that way, then I won't launch into the sex conversation straight away.
Okay.
So I will make a distinction around those two different kinds of dates. Is this going to be a sex date or is this going to be a date with a view to something a bit more substantial?
Okay, so within the first 5 minutes, you can determine. Maybe-ish.
10 minutes?
If it's going to be a sex date.
Yeah.
Okay, so sex, because you're like, there's chemistry here, but it's not going to go anywhere because of... Mm-hmm. So I know that's just a subjective thing. So you know in the moment. And then how do you... have, because you actually wrote an article about how to have good casual sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of us are like, well, kids really, we could think it could be very challenging. Like, how do I have it not have emotions involved? So would you call that as like, that's a casual sex kind of thing?
That's what I would call a casual sex
and
thing,
how do you make sure you get your needs met during something that you'll never see someone
again? I talk
again?
About it. Well, no, see, I don't have one night stands.
Okay.
That's the distinction.
Right.
For me, a casual sex date does not mean, you know, love them and leave them.
Open relationship kind
of thing. It just means we're going to hang out and we're going to do this thing on a semi-regular basis, but I know that you're not a person I want to have a joint bank account with.
And you've told, do you lay that out too right away?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Because I mean, for me, I have a reverence for sex. I think sex is one of the greatest gifts to humanity.
Yes.
And if I am going to share that with a human, I need to like them.
Yeah.
And so a casual lover for me is still somebody I treat with reverence. They're not just like a dick on a stick, you know?
Right.
It's if I wanted that, I've got a box full.
Right.
You know, I don't need a human flesh and blood person to fulfill that for me. I can do that part by myself. So I think one of the things that a lot of us miss in casual sex is to have reverence for the person who you're with.
Yeah.
That we tend to associate casual with disrespect.
Yeah, that's so true.
Why do we do that?
I don't know why.
There is no need for that.
I think because we don't understand how you could actually care for someone, even have emotions, but it doesn't have to be the one. I understand what you're saying.
And we don't have respect for sex either. No, we don't. We think that we only have sex with dirty, cheap, you know, whatevers.
Let's talk about the reverence for sex.
I have reverence for sex, and I have reverence for the people I have sex with. I don't want to share a house with them. I don't want us to have shared bank accounts, and I don't want to meet their parents. But I still like them.
You're like, no going home for holidays. Not meeting your parents. Right.
And that doesn't mean that... But I want wellness for them. I want them to be well. Of course. Want them to be happy. I want them to be content. I just don't want to be their main person.
Right.
But then I meet people, one who I've met right now, actually, who I do want that with. But it's a very different energy. It's a very different thing. And with that person, we've been holding off on a lot of the sex stuff because the energy is really different.
Oh.
And I'm okay with that too. So, but I think it comes with having a buoyancy and being, and I trust myself, Emily. You know, this is the thing. I trust myself to carry myself into these complicated situations and to trust that the person I'm with is going to carry themselves. That I'm not going to have to do the hard work to manage my feelings and their feelings. That I'm going to trust that they can do that for themselves.
Right.
Sometimes they can, sometimes they can't. But this is stuff that you start finding out after more dates.
Right.
Whether or not that person is able to do that.
How do you not fall into the situation of being the teacher always?
I do mind. I mind a lot.
Yeah, same.
I personally
asking for a friend.
I personally really hold that part back. I really, really, and I say to them again up front, because I do this for a job, if I feel like I have to enter into that territory in my private life, it's a real turn off for me. So I'm happy to talk about stuff between us. But if it starts to feel like I'm teaching you shit that I wish you knew already,
right?
I'm going to send you to see one of my colleagues.
Oh, good. Like, here's the clitoris. I'm like, here's the clitoris, wherever they're starting.
Yeah. But there are things like, obviously, with sex stuff, that certain activities that I like that they're not going to know. So I'll happily tell them, you know, this is how I like to be touched, or I like this, or I like that.
Do you tell that right away? Like,
I
know what you're saying, right? I'm just trying to understand for people, too. Like, how do you communicate right away? Early enough on so you don't have to waste time having sex that you're not getting your needs met.
If it's a sex thing and I'm hooking up with that person as a sex thing and it's going to be an ongoing sexual connection, I have absolutely no problem telling them what I want them to do sexually.
Right, and don't you find that most people are responsive?
Because I would know that in advance. And it establishes not only an erotic connection, it also establishes consent. I get to find out what they are into. And I would rather know before we get into bed whether or not that person is going to be what I'm looking for. If I say I'm into this, this, and this, and they're like, ooh, that sounds horrible, I'm like, cool, no problem. I'm really glad that we had this conversation.
Yeah, you got to figure out sooner than later why.
Because you're not going to be compatible with everybody.
No, and that's okay too. Mm-hmm. What if you were? That would be the problem. Okay, Cindy Darnell, thank you so much for being here. I have 5 quickie questions to ask you that we ask all of our guests.
Okay.
You're going to like these though. It's going to be easy.
All right.
Biggest turn on.
New York City.
Oh, I love that you love it there. Biggest turn off.
Taxes.
A guy who shows up with his IRS forms is not hot. What's your biggest dating deal breaker? Like, you're on a date and boom.
Bigotry. I cannot stand it. Homophobia, racism, bigotry, sexism. If I get a waft of, you know those blah, blah, blah. Right. I'm like, I'm out of here. See you later.
What personality trait is the most important in a partner?
Listening.
What's the sexiest body part to you?
Shoulders.
Good job, Cindy Darnell. Thank you so much for being here. Tell us whether you can find your website and all that.
Yes, so my website is Cindy Darnell, CindyDarnell.com.
All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks to Ken, Samantha, Julia, Michelle, producer Jamie, and Michael. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.